Scott, thank you for being here with us today.
I'm delighted.
So to start off, your website says that you have worked on regional parks, urban waterfronts, preservation efforts, transportation systems, and educational facilities. What have you worked on in Ithaca?
Well, that's not all at once, luckily. That's over 20 some odd years. In Ithaca and also New York City and a few other places. The waterfront projects were interesting. They were New York City and along the what is now the Hudson River Greenway and the Brooklyn Bridge Park were early projects I was involved in. But in Ithaca, I've been involved in development now for about 20 years, and I chaired the Planning Development Board for the city. So I was on the city side of that for about 7 years. And I've been involved in other development projects since then. Some of our big projects we're working on right now are the Chainworks District, the old Emerson plant on South Hill, and the Herald Square project, which we brought through about a year ago, that's going through some changes right now. The State Street Triangle, which you've probably heard about, is a more recent project, 11-story mixed-use building downtown. The Argos, we were very heavily involved in and still remain involved in that, and other projects. Eco Village, way back in my, right out of grad school, I was involved in Eco Village and involved in the preservation of the State Theater very heavily for a few years as well, some years ago.
And you also served on the Planning and Development Board. How did that experience influence what you do now?
Oh, it's interesting. To be able to be on different sides of the table for these development projects has been fascinating to me. Certainly my ideas in school when I was a grad student in urban planning and landscape architecture. And my planning ideas at that point before I actually was involved in an actual project were different, no doubt, than they are now after all these years of working with actually putting projects up. But sitting as a planning board member and holding the planning ideals of the community while negotiating with developers is very different than sitting with developers who have a very, very clear picture of their financing and what they need to do to get a project done in terms of timing. Those are different perspectives. And so it's been useful to me and fascinating, actually, to be on both sides of that table.
And now you are consulting with developer Campus Advantage, an architecture firm Stream Collaborative, on project plans for the Tre Block building at the corner of Aurora and East State Street. So who actually owns this piece of land?
So the land is owned by Green State Properties, the Colbert family, and has been for some years. That site was, interestingly, that area was one of the densest of Ithaca when it was developing. If you look back in old 19th century maps, that's where, at that intersection of Aurora and State, where the community developed itself. And then a lot of it came down in urban renewal. You know, Ithaca suffered just like so many other communities in the 60s with urban renewal, and that was all torn down with the expectations that it would be redeveloped. And all we got out of the redevelopment was a single-story building and a surface parking lot, which has been there for years. So it's been waiting forever, seemingly, you know, for 30, almost 40 years for some development to come that actually fills in that fabric again, fills in that gap. And so it's great and exciting to be part of what's coming with that.
So can you explain the original draft of the Tre Block project and compared to the new draft, which was actually just detailed in an Ithaca Voice article today? And what prompted those changes to be made between those two drafts?
Sure. With a lot of these projects, you begin with some ideas, some schematic ideas, some conceptual ideas, and you bring them to the city, to the community, to the public, and say, what do you think? How is this? And then you have a conversation of massing, of materials, how it relates to the street, all the urban planning and architectural ideas with the community, and then come back and make changes. So this is not an unusual sequence and trajectory for a project to have. Certainly with this one, I think the biggest shock was how big the building is. You know, the city in 2013 upzoned that from 60 to 120 feet. With the idea that it would be a, you know, this, if we're going to have a big building, it's going to be here. There's three open sides, you know, that triangular site. right in the heart of the city. But when you actually see a building of that scale, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, that's really, it's a large building. And indeed it is. The building we're proposing is about 116 feet. So we're below that, but, you know, not that much below that. And the question then, if you're going to have a big building on that site, is are the materials, is the mass, is the structure fit contextually, and is it good architecture? You know, great, good building. Big buildings are great as long as they're good buildings. A big building that isn't that great is not very exciting for the community. So I think that's the conversation we're having right now. We had been working with Kelly Grossman out of Austin, Texas, architects, who I think have done a great job, but they're not local. And we thought it important to get some local voices in there. I'm part of a collaborative studio with Stream. And so I brought them in just as consultants to begin with, and then we got them under contract to actually be part of the design team. I think what we and they have come up with in the last 2 weeks or so are some pretty substantial responses to some of those concerns. Looking at precedents of how buildings like this, how an 11-story building is in a downtown with 6- and 4-story buildings. We did a lot of precedent studies. And the result of looking at those earlier buildings and making our modern building make sense, I think we have some pretty good drawings. I'm very excited to show these on Tuesday. And some of them have been in the press already, I know, on the Ithaca Voice and others.
In looking at the state of the project right now, what parts have already been improved and what parts are up for debate and consideration?
I think the biggest thoughts and something we heard from the planning board when we were there a few weeks ago was to think of the pedestrian experience, of the what that intersection is like. I mean, in certain ways, and we just began with a figure ground study, a open space and mass study of where the new Simeons will be. Jason Demarest is working on that right now. The Viva, the new Marriott and Madeline's, and then our building, and what space is created as an urban space that traffic goes through, you know, certainly vehicular traffic, but a lot of pedestrian traffic as well. And how do we improve that experience? So we went to the city and met with transportation engineers to talk about that intersection. We've hired SRF out of Rochester, Steve Ferrante, as a transportation engineer and analyst. And we also have civil engineers, T.G. Miller, who are local, to look at that intersection. We've come up with a scheme that is really interesting. It increases the pedestrian space. There's the potential of really wrapping Aurora Street, the restaurant row on Aurora Street, around to State, and also including the experience of the commons across that intersection. So we're beginning to explore that. That's, I think, the thing I'm most excited about. The other is just making rational sense of some of the facades and elevations of the building, where the cornice lines are, having the elevation, the windows, honestly express what's behind them. You know, a living room looks like a living room, a bedroom and all. We have also added studio units to the project, as well as 1- and 2-bedroom. And we have worked on the piece that's immediately across from the new Marriott building to be a more modern building. It almost like a standalone building. And you'll see that in some of the elevations as well that we're going to be presenting on Tuesday.
Okay. So have any parts of this project been fully approved?
No, this is the beginning of the process. I mean, we have presented to the city twice now. I think both those conversations have helped us craft a better project. And then it is now going through its approvals. The planning board is expected to declare lead agency for environmental review on Tuesday. And then there'll be a sequence of benchmarks for that review in the next couple months.
Okay, great. So, as you mentioned, some of the big public outcry, I guess you would say, to this project is how big it is. Or at least some of the dissent that's come back on the project has been how large it is. And I attended one meeting in which some of the members of that meeting were concerned about casting a shadow over the commons with the height of the building. So are any of the new suggested changes to the project or with the new draft going to address the issue of the building eclipsing the commons?
I think that's an important issue always when you have buildings go up. And one of the things, certainly when I was on the planning board and certainly now on the planning board, one of the things you ask for are shadow studies. So we hadn't developed the building far enough to do those studies. We have now. We've submitted shadow studies throughout the year. Of course, obviously, shadows change. You know, they're different in winter and in summer, depending on where the sun is and what time. So we've illustrated all that. Our findings were very interesting of what we modeled, and we spent some time on this. We modeled all the new buildings. So the new Carey building, the new Canopy building, Canopy Hotel, the Marriott, the existing commons, and we put them all on a SketchUp model, and we did all these studies of how the sun moves around all those. I think the biggest concern was casting shadow on the commons, and that feels pretty good from our sun shadow studies. What the Marriott does and what we do, I think we'd have to illustrate all that. I'm trying to speak figuratively. One concern, we all like to sit, or most of us do, outside of Viva at certain times of day, and that seems safe. We did it on Cinco de Mayo, and 4 o'clock at Cinco de Mayo, just to see, what that would be like, and that looked all right. The commons generally looks all right. But of course, in some times of year, the commons itself is all in shadow just from itself. If you even have a four-story building at a certain time of day in winter, there's shadow with that too. So we prepared those, we'll illustrate those, and I'm sure there'll be an animated conversation, as always, regarding those.
And another issue that you touched on was the traffic issue, crafting the traffic patterns. And one of the ideas for the new draft is to remove the northbound turning lane to create a pedestrian area with widened sidewalks and outdoor seating and dining. And if this particular proposal goes through, does that mean that northbound traffic on Aurora won't be able to turn onto State Street anymore?
No, not at all. So, and I'm not a traffic engineer, I'm just a sort of designer and planner. And so we can draw all sorts of really cartoony lines and say, oh, let's turn this street into pedestrian. We always want to do that, right? And we planners do. And then we hand it to the engineers and they go, no, I don't think that's going to work. You're going to need a radius this much for this kind of truck, and this much for this kind of vehicle. And so they did something called auto turn on a lot of our recommendations. And the drawings went back with the civil engineers, with the transportation engineers, and our team. And we came up with a scheme that the transportation engineer says, and this has been supported certainly by the city, we have a better intersection with this. It actually does work indeed better. That slip lane was tremendously inefficient. So both in traffic calming and allowing those turns with some of these changes. So that's what we're hearing so far. This is a beginning exploration. There's a lot more conversation to go with how that intersection might work. But we're feeling pretty good about the possibility of gaining some more land for pedestrians while continuing to allow the traffic to work just as well or maybe even better.
So City Transportation Engineer Tim Logue has expressed concerns about the project's traffic study in that it underestimates the impacts this will have on traffic. This building is expected to add about 600 residents to the downtown area from what we understand. So according to the traffic study, do you have any idea how many of those 600 residents are expected to have personal vehicles?
I think certainly there were some assumptions at the beginning. Campus Advantage has a history of doing primarily student housing. This is really aimed more of at a mixed audience and more of a diverse building. So those numbers change depending on who those people are. And I think we've gone back and forth on that. We've had several meetings with the city engineer. We agree, our traffic engineers agree that some of those numbers need to be tweaked as this goes on, and they're working on that right now. If I quote how many might, I think that keeps on changing from what I hear. We'll have more information as that goes forward. I want to hear. I know the traffic analysts are working on that right now, so we probably will have that information by Tuesday, hopefully.
So when you're discussing accommodating residents with vehicles, are there any zoning requirements for parking associated with this building?
There are not. And so we've been, and this is a conversation, I know we had this with, I brought the Canopy project through as well and continue to work with that project and others downtown. And every community has these. The desire that all of us have to park on the street downtown or in open surface parking lots just because it's easy and to go run in and get something at Viva or whatever it is. With at the same time wanting a vibrant, active downtown that doesn't have a lot of surface parking, you know, so that struggle between those two things is something that any growing city, and luckily we are a growing city as opposed to going back the other way, is engaged in. There are no zoning requirements for cars with this, but there's really a huge capacity in the garages. There are three garages within walking distance of this project. And we worked a lot with the parking director, Frank Nagy, and with the city looking at that capacity and how we might access that capacity versus the other needs at other times of day, the hotels, et cetera. We're in a very involved conversation with that. But I know that's a community concern, and even one for subjectively for me as well as we look at it. But I think that's the trade between those two ideas. I want to bring my car everywhere and just park it right near me and walk in is one idea. And the other is we need to really think about the future and about what we want downtown as an active pedestrian city as well.
So as you mentioned, Campus Advantage is a developer that usually focuses on student housing. Much of the housing in this building is geared towards students, but the new draft does say some of the plans for rooms have been changed to appeal more to general residents. So how did that shift come about?
Certainly one thing we heard and immediately out of the gate with this was a fear that this would be, as one council person said to me, a monoculture building. And I think that's a fair enough concern of having any building that's in the middle of our diverse, active, interesting downtown that serves one purpose, particularly a building of this size and of this scale. So the developers heard that. They've certainly done other mixed projects around the country. And they responded. They immediately responded to that and said, we can change that. So the four-bedroom units with shared living areas that were more geared towards students, 60% of those now have changed. 60% of the units in the building to one bedroom, two bedrooms, and studios to offer more possibility for a diverse residential population.
And now talking beyond traffic concerns, how will the addition of these 600 residents that we're talking about impact the downtown area?
For me, I think it's a great thing that this is where we want our density. And I'm speaking personally and as a planner. Having our residential density downtown, we certainly need we need beds, we need apartments. It's been very clear that there's a lack of residential stock for every demographic, from affordable to retiree to condo to young professional to student. There's a real need for residential units. So to have that right downtown, near our restaurants, near our transportation system, we're lucky to have TCAT, and TCAT's just getting better every year. To have it within walking distance to TCAT, walking distance to services, I think it can only be a positive urban civic thing, is to increase our residential population downtown.
So Campus Advantage is a developer based in Austin, Texas. There's been a lot of discussion recently, not just with this project, but with other projects as well, about the pros and cons of bringing in developers and construction companies as opposed to using local businesses. And your business, Woodham Design, is based in Ithaca. So what are your thoughts on this debate as someone who kind of has a unique perspective there? You're a local business working with someone from Texas.
I think there are there are two separate conversations with this, right? One is, the land is owned by whoever it's owned. It's sold to whoever it's sold. Certainly, there's a local landowner right now. The land has been for sale, and there are local developers who have not bought it. It's a big undertaking. and a really substantial project. So I'm not surprised that an outside developer is involved in this to buy that land. And that is simply the way that private property and free market development works in the country. It would be hard to restrict land sales to only people within the city or within the town or within the county or regionally. I don't know how that would work legally. So that happens a lot, right? I mean, there's land that's just bought by whoever it's bought and developed by whoever it's developed. The second question is local contractors, local designers, local materials, local fitting out of those projects and furniture and all the rest. And I think that's a different conversation. And I think we all try to think locally, certainly in places like Ithaca, and that's why we live here, and that's why we're so fond of our city. To look to developers to work with the local population, I don't think that is an out of the question. And I think that's going to be part of the conversation ongoing right now, certainly in terms of local labor. There's a great interest in making sure that our local labor is completely employed. And I think that's a reasonable conversation to have. How that actually works, you know, how you limit developers in their bidding, I think is the conversation that's going on right now. And having been a sort of construction project manager, I'm very interested in how that's going to work. There's project labor agreements potentially that places like Cornell are able to do. And maybe there's room to do that. I think greater minds than I are at work in looking at how that might happen.
And you mentioned earlier that you were looking into leadership in energy and environmental design building certification, or LEED. And for those who are not familiar with LEED, can you explain it and why is there an interest in getting certification?
So LEED is a national standard by the Green Building Institute of... There's a checklist, and there's basically a lot of paperwork to say, okay, how does each aspect of this project, is it more or less sustainable? And then there's a score at the end, and you go for certain levels in LEED. And in looking at our project, what we're hearing from MEP, from mechanical, electrical, plumbing, from our folks of systems, they're saying, our systems are way, that we're proposing for this, even at this early stage, surpass the New York Energy Code already. We're building right downtown near transit. We're building, there's a lot of positive infill, a lot of positive things for LEED for this project. So just an initial cursory glance, it might be quite easy for us to go for LEED. At least to use LEED as a standard and say, well, even if we don't want to do all the monitoring of it to get LEED, we actually reach whatever level this is. So I think it's exciting. I mean, I think for any project we're building now, it just makes all the sense in the world not to build stupidly, but to build with new systems that are more sustainable and more energy efficient. It's better for the bottom line of the project, and it's better for all of us. I mean, it just makes sense to explore. Sometimes materials or systems are not available, or they're too complex, or they're not proven. I mean, there's choices to be made, but not to explore it seems, particularly with a large project right downtown, it makes sense to explore it.
So are there any thoughts on what level of LEED certification the building will be seeking?
I don't think we're anywhere near that yet. Yeah. We're just looking and saying, boy, we have a lot of stuff that actually fits LEED. Let's really look and see if we can do this. So I don't know what that means yet in terms of what level.
And in addition to seeking this LEED certification, what will be done to make the operations of the building sustainable in addition to the actual constructed building itself?
Well, I think, again, you know, the same way as the building and its systems, we're all much more cognizant of operations and what we do to even just save money within projects. Let alone code or let alone our own personal ideals about the environment. So in all the projects I've worked, I mean, I was just working with Canopy and looking at their management system that they're developing for this. Operationally, I'm sure there'll be, and again, we haven't developed this yet, so I'm kind of making it up for these guys, but I'm sure as they look at that, again, it just makes sense to look at their management system. I know they will have an in-house management system, a management group in this project. About 7 employees are on site in most of their projects, building manager and others, certainly for something of this scale. So that'll be an interesting conversation going ahead. I can't imagine they will not do that, but I'm sort of saying that they will certainly look at it if I'm part of the project team.
All right, Scott. So that covers most of our questions that we had for you. Was there anything that you wanted to add that you feel we didn't address or that you just wanted to say about this project in general?
Well, if we're talking about the State Street Triangle project in particular, I think this is really an exciting moment for downtown Ithaca. I think there was an initial shock at the scale of what the zoning is for this site. And certainly it would be difficult for a project for that land price, you know, for the land price of being able to build in a 120 zone. It's a tremendously expensive piece of land. So I think whether it's this project or another, it's going to be a big building. And here we're looking at what that means. And if we can get a good building out of this that really improves the downtown, I think it's a wonderful moment for us as a community.
And so just one follow-up question with that in terms of how expensive the land is and the zoning for it. As you said earlier, the zoning for it is 120 feet, which is about 11 stories, which is what the building is looking at. What are the reasons behind building to full height that is allowed at this parcel?
Oh, when you develop any land, certainly the price is associated very much with the ability of what one can do. And so it's purely a matter of the economics of the project. You pay a certain amount for that land, you pay a certain amount for, and I must add, building downtown is much more expensive than building on the outskirts. Hence the need for a tax abatement and other things for projects of this scale downtown. So that comes down, and again, these are the things I learned after school. These things come down to pure economics. There's this price, the cost of doing the work, there's this price for the land, and then there's so many units that you need to carry that cost. And it comes down to some very fine numbers in between those two things to make sure that it all works.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Scott. That offered a lot of great insight into the Trayblock project.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.